You're on the road less traveled with Gary L. and Geeky's Boo on RealLibertyMedia.com and RLM Radio. Here it is, Sunday again, the 25th of February, 2018, 7:01 p.m. Happy to see you guys out there. Hello, Geeky's Boo. What are you doing?
Say you. I am just fine.
Yeah, what you been stirring up lately?
As much as I can. Stirring up as much as I can with these rascally rabbit dogs of ours.
The dirts. They're the dirts. Anyway, happy to see you guys here today. Looks like the chat room's kind of filling up there, which is nice. And we just passed 3 days ago, I believe. I'm not correct. I may be wrong. Somewhere around there. We passed the 10-year anniversary of RealLibertyMedia.com. 10 years, a decade in service. A decade that's been set there, has been giving access to all kinds of really, really neat information. Hard to find other places, especially today in this atmosphere of censorship and misdirection and hiding search results and manipulating search engine results and all these sorts of things. Real Liberty Media is still there, still hanging in there. And understand that a lot of people stepped up to the plate and donated some money to help keep this operation going. But there's still a little bit of a shortfall. So all you guys out there who maybe, I don't know, maybe it just things slip your mind in all this kind of stuff. And for those who just can't, okay, I feel you. We definitely feel you that way. It's just hard to help out sometimes in all the different places that you'd like. But sometimes we just forget. We might have a PayPal account, okay? And it might be something you haven't thought about in a long time. And there could be $5, $10 sitting in that old PayPal account that's just been gathering dust and you've kind of forgotten about it. So you can go to that. I encourage you at this very moment to go to RealLibertyMedia.com, R-E-A-L, LibertyMedia.com, and you can look at the front page and just some of the offerings here. Just have to think about it for a minute. Where else can you find a place that has a channel selector, kind of like your old school television, and on the front there are 18 channels. 18 channels, and you just click on them. You have the Freaker's Ball, and that's a show that Moose Girl and Grimner do every Friday night. They have a lot of candid talk there. That's one of the
neat... A lot of fun.
Yeah, and play a lot of music. Now, you won't get the music in the archive because, well, intellectual property rights.
I don't think Grim knows this, but my mother is usually a guest on his show every Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes in as a guest and doesn't say anything because
mm-hmm.
she loves his show and she just listens to it.
Mm-hmm. See, you even have you have groupies.
Yeah.
So Mama's a groupie for Real Liberty Media, and that's cool. The Freaker's Ball, neat stuff. And one of the big takeaways here from RLM is that there is no censorship, you see, other than the legal side, which you have, you know, the legal censorship of things like intellectual property rights. Although a lot of that can be challenged for fair use, that's another topic. On Channel 2, you have Hal's channel, it's Behind the Woodshed. His show is every Sunday from 3 to 5. And there must be 15 terabytes of old show information. And the sad thing of it is, a lot of what Hal has done in the distant past has been lost to the bit bucket. He's been on a variety of channels. This is not his first rodeo. Hal's been around, and he's probably one of the smartest people we know. So if you just dismiss anything that he says out of hand, you're making a big mistake. And then you have RLM Radio, which is the alternative to going to the show page. You can go to RLM Radio, and you can listen to pre-recorded shows in a loop that also carries the live shows. So it's always running. So if you want to listen to some of the old shows and listen to it like in the background, you can go to RLM Radio. and you'll hear something running all the time. Then you have Mike Rivero, Channel 4, What Really Happened. You can check that out. And Moose Girl has her own show, The Mighty Moose Show. She shows up on Channel 5. Then you have UCY TV on number 6, and goes on and on. I won't go through all of them, except maybe hit some highlights. Chuck O'Chelly's on 14, Republic Broadcasting on 12. Oh, look, number 16, Gigi Blue, that's The Road Less Traveled.
Mm-hmm.
We're still on the channel selector. So, you know, there's a whole lot to go with here. And that's just the front page, right?
Right.
Then you have the blog posts on the up at the top in the menu area. You have blog posts. You can go up there and you can see some of the voluminous amounts of archives that exist here. And then you have show pages that some mostly correspond to who the bloggers are, and podcasts, which kind of correspond as well. And then you go to the RLM stores. You can shop RLM. Well, guess what happens? You can actually help support Real Liberty Media by going to the RLM Amazon store or going directly to a link that says RLM gear. Let me see. There you go. There's your RLM shop, and you have drinkware and clothing and hats. So you like, you know, they like the RLM logo. You can get all that on a hat or a shirt or mug or something like that. So there's all kinds of ways to help Real Liberty Media. And why should you do that? Because they do so much for you. And you personally may not appreciate the fact that someone else who is positively influenced by some of the information they've gotten from this show may actually do something that has a net effect of helping you indirectly. We don't think about that much, but something to consider. Anyway, I do hope that you might take the opportunity to throw a few shekels, throw a few dollars in the direction of Real Liberty Media, either directly through PayPal, or even if you have a fractional Bitcoin somewhere that on a lark you thought it would be neat to have, you know, and maybe it's just a very fractional one, but it would be greatly appreciated because you can donate that to RLM. You don't want it? Hey, throw it in the bit bucket over here. And, of course, the Amazon page. So anyway, I think we've covered that, Gigi's Boo. Anything you'd like to add about your experience with the people at Real Liberty Media?
I just love everybody. I've had some really good times here and made some lifelong, maybe into the other world, friends, forever friends.
Yeah, and that's something we didn't really talk about was the IRC chat. There is a chat room, and it's also been here for a very long time, along with many of its residents have been here for a very long time. And there are a lot of folks in that chat room right now, even as we speak. But if you know anything at all about IRC, there are ways you can script it so you can create your own app on your computer screen. You just click and go into the chat room. Or on the homepage at Real Liberty Media, you just slide down under that channel selector I was just talking about. You can place your name in the little window that says nickname and click the start button. That's real easy. There's nothing hard about that. There's nothing hard about any of this, really. The hardest thing that I've run into is the heads of a lot of people. Anyway, we do have the chat room going on here with Cowboy Tech and Grimner and Moose Girl and Kate and Bethsy and Chalstony and Chloe and Free Enslaved and Graham C and Ivy Don C and Java Doctor and JJ Wanataco, Meister Brow, Rain, RLM, Fluke, Hello, Rob Works, Trust No One, Beetle, Behind a Woodshed, Bitcoin Bob, Kofax, Dakota, Dima, Frumpy, Gigi, Boo, Gooberzilla, Java Doctor, Kozu, Moy, Mr. Asmodeus, there's Asmo, Poxified, Pawnsaw, Slim, Jim, Flim, Teddy, and the Phantom. Quite a list, Gigi, Boo. Quite a list.
Yes.
For sure. For sure. Definitely is. So anyway, lots of things going on. We have a few things to talk about. Just want to open up with just a couple of quick items. There was an interesting event. If you know about Minds.com, both Behind the Woodshed and The Road Less Traveled have a presence at Minds.com. It's an alternative to something like Facebook. So you have Minds, it's still in a beta format. However, there was an interview between one of the co-founders of Minds and Tucker Carlson on Fox. And I have a link for that. It's very interesting the way that they are under attack, actually. Minds is under attack by Google. Google doesn't like them. I mean, can't imagine why. But one thing that the co-founder talked about is the fact that they are completely open source. And there's no hidden gotchas or anything, but they are going to approach this from an ad-funded perspective. But it'll be a completely open source ad-funded thing. So they're breaking some ground, and it's well worth taking a look at. And we will include that interview. It's a short interview in the blogcaster and the chat room. And also, BitChute, if you don't hear about BitChute, it's an alternative to YouTube. And BitChute is one of those places that you don't get censored. Wow. As an example, RLM has a YouTube page. They do great work. But YouTube doesn't care too much about RLM's content because they keep it pretty well sequestered. They keep it marked as restricted. And while the restricted thing has a smiley face on it that claims it protects the young ones from objectionable content, but what it actually does, it operates as a choke, as a suppressor to keep your view counts down. And there are a lot of ways they do that that we have discovered, and a lot of side effects of that that we've discovered, but the main side effect is that the view counts are suppressed because BitChute's pretty new. We have a presence on BitChute. Behind Woodshed has a presence on BitChute. And our view counts on BitChute are 300% higher than YouTube. And bear in mind, BitChute's a new place. A lot of people haven't even heard of it. But the 300% higher, there's a message in that. It's also a message that BitChute, they thought about changing their name to SpeakOut, but due to users feeling like SpeakOut was maybe a little too in your face, maybe, they went ahead and removed that and went back to BitChute. Now, BitChute also is experimenting with monetization through ad revenue. So there's another alternative that's out there. PewTube. Okay, Grimnir talks about another spot called PEW, Papa Echo Whiskey Tube, PewTube. I'll have to check that out. Let's see what that's about. As we talk about all these things, last week we talked about the fact that Germany was upset with Facebook, saying that they violated their privacy laws, basically. Well, guess what? Belgium has now done the same thing. Belgium court orders Facebook to stop collecting data on citizens and threatens them with $125 million in fines. What do you think about that? So you see, a lot of people like to think that things stay the same, but they don't. That's really the funny thing. If you really want to approach this with a sense of humor, it's really what's funny about these people who set up these humongous institutions and these monolithic organizations. They think they're riding on top of the world, that nothing can ever knock them down. Well, that's just not historically sustainable to begin with. It's not going to happen because especially when you start messing around with people. You start messing around with people, they're going to find another way, and they're going to find a way to knock you off your horse. And history is resplendent with examples of such as that. So there we go. Belgium's in their face. The court determined that Facebook does not adequately inform users that it's collecting information. I think that's very similar to what Germany found. They say if they fail to comply with the judgment, it will be fined €250,000 per day with a cap of €100 million. Yeehaw! They'll have to throw a lot more advertising up on YouTube to fund that bill. Let's see, real quickly here, what else we got that seemed to jump up into our face this week? Down in Miami-Dade County, well, you thought you owned your property, but people always make that mistake thinking they own their property. The Miami-Dade City Well, actually, Miami Shores is probably a private development. Homeowners, yeah. However, they are banned from having front yard vegetable gardens, which they challenged. They took to the Supreme Court, ultimately, and the Supreme Court failed to hear the case. So guess what? If you live in Miami Shores, you can't have a garden in your front yard. So it's not your property. On the other side of that, there may have been some homeowners stuff that you signed when you bought the stupid thing to begin with, like a dummy. But once you sign the contractual agreement, no, they can hold it over your head. So don't get too wound up about that one. Just think again before you buy into a place that won't let you do something like that, and then think you're going to come back on the back end to change it, because you're not. You're in a contract. Okay, Gigi's Boo, I think that's enough of that. What we got? We're 20 minutes into this. Why don't you talk a little bit about something that's really, really fun. Now, this is a fun topic, but it's also instructional. And that's what we try to do here at the Road Less Traveled. We try to come up with entertaining ways of maybe sharing something off the wall, maybe new and different, and something maybe not so new that we just never really thought much about. This is going to be an examination of something that we find in Appalachians, but it turns out it has a deep historical basis, and it's something called a shivery.
How many people in the chat room know what a shivery is without looking it up on Google? Well, a shivery is a very old custom, and it started in England and in German. And in England, it's called the Schimmington Ride. Now, Gary, what is it called in German?
It's called Katzenmusik.
Katzenmusik.
Let me translate that. And it's kind of fun. It was kind of funny to translate it, because Katzen is a plural form of cat. And Musik, of course, is very much like it sounds. It's music. So in German, they call it Katzenmusik.
And it's a lot of hollering, which goes right down with the shivery, what we're going to tell you about the shivery. Years ago, it was really started by a crowd to make as much noise as possible by beating on pots, pans, or anything they could get their hands on in parades. It was often referred to as rough music. There were three types. The first was generally the most violent. A wrongdoer or wrongdoers might be dragged from their home or their place of work and paraded by force through a community. In the process, they were subjected to the crowd. They might be pelted frequently by a victim or victims, and they were dunked at the end of the proceedings. Another term comes to mind. They were usually tied to a rail, and I'm sure all of you have heard the term, "We're running out of town riding on a rail." Well, that's where that comes from. They would tie them to a rail, and then they would take them to some water, and they'd dunk them, I guess, until they almost lost their breath or had to hold the breath, and then it might be that it almost killed them. A lot of communities use rough music to express their disapproval of different types of violation of community norms. For example, they might target marriages, which they disapproved of, such as a union between an older woman or a much younger woman or an older man or to a much younger woman, whatever. But also, if a widow or witherer remarried too quick, they also used it in case of adulterous relationship, also against wife beaters, unmarried mothers, and sometimes the community disapproved of a marriage just in itself. And they didn't have to have a reason. They just didn't like it. The funny thing about this, and through history, what I've researched is women seem to have been particularly prominent in the organizing and participating in such events, with the gathering, the crowds out of the pubs and taverns. That was usually the meeting place, and marching them home. The word shivery is likely from a Latin verb called carabera, which really means rattling kitchenware with an iron rod. It goes on, and it was brought down, like I said, through the English and the stag riding. They called it stag riding, where it was really just riding them out on a rail, and they mounted them. it was pretty rough, and it was a real, real hard time. And as they were riding, especially a man that was caught in adultery or a woman, they just beat him with wooden paddles as he came by. And then after the dipping, if they weren't satisfied, they threw him into a pond or a river, and it was sink or really die. It was real funny because they used everything in the house to beat on: frying pans, saucepans, kettles, barn implement. They wanted to create a long-lasting embarrassment to the alleged perpetrator. It was very, very sad in a lot of ways to see this, but they also had a little rhyme that went with it, and I had never heard this, but I'm going to tell you about it. With a ran-can-tan on my old tin can, Mr. or Mrs. and her good man or woman, she banged him for spending a penny when he stood in need. She up with a three-footed stool, she struck him so hard, she cut him so deep till the blood run down like a new stuck sheep. So there was a lot of music and a lot of going on and this type of thing, but the chivalry came on down and came over to the colonies, and it was not done so much as a punishment as it was done later in American history's life around weddings. The rowdiest and the loudest was held in Tampa, Florida in the 1800s, and it lasted all night and all day at a couple's marriage. Now, in the Appalachian Mountains, this is a big thing. Even if the couple is from the Appalachian Mountains, they know they're going to get a chivalry. Usually, it happens on the wedding night if they don't leave immediately and go on the honeymoon. Most of them now leave and go on a honeymoon, but years ago, they just went to their place of dwelling. It starts off with a lot of beating and banging. And just about the time for the young couple to go to bed, they start beating and banging, shooting guns around the house, the whole nine yards, and it usually scares you literally to death, especially if you have a young couple where one has not been raised in the Appalachian Mountains and does not know what's involved. And it absolutely petrifies them. The other one will say, "Oh, this is our chivalry." And they will say, "Well, what in the hell is a chivalry?" And they'll usually say, "Just sit back and you'll know." Well, see, they won't leave them alone. You've got to come out. And as custom in the mountains, you better have a little shine stuck back because all the men folks are invited in to have a drink. And if they don't have the drink, then they're going to come in anyway. And you're not going to get any sleep. You're going to sit up. The ladies usually go back home. And they're busy in the kitchens and things, and they're going to keep them busy all night long, beating and banging, sitting up, telling stories, talking, just anything to cause them to miss that first night of marriage. Really funny in a lot of ways, because after all night of sitting up with them, about maybe 4 o'clock in the morning, they'll say, "Well, we're going to let you go to sleep. We're going to leave and let you go to sleep." Well, no sooner than they get in the bed, till here they come beating and banging again, probably no later than an hour, hour and a half, maybe toward daybreak, and the wives are with them, and they come back in the house, and they bring breakfast, and everybody has breakfast. They're cooking up breakfast for everybody. Then they spend the morning with them. Now, this can really be a problem, because by the time they do have their wedding night, they're both so tired that the other one do is sleep. I want to tell you a real quick story about a friend of mine who married a minister from up in the mountains. He was from around here, but he took a church in West Virginia. And they married in the church. And her family went up, and they were not going to go on a honeymoon because they married on Saturday night, and he was going to preach on Sunday morning. So she had hung her nightgown in the bedroom and had everything out ready, you know, everything was just par for the course. And all of a sudden, they hear shotguns and pots and pans beating. And she said, her name was Rachel, And Rachel said, I was literally scared to death. I had no idea what was going on. And her husband didn't either. His name was James. And he went to the window and he peeked out and he saw it was the church members in the community. And he opened the door and he said, what's going on? Is something going on? They said, no, tonight's your shivery. So in they came. They sat up all night and they mingled all over the house. And because she had her gown hung in the front bedroom, they presumed that was the room they were going to spend their wedding night in. So they sat all night laughing and talking, and both of them were just totally exhausted from a big wedding and a reception and knowing they had to get up and have church the next day twice now. You have church on Sunday morning and Sunday night, and they were just totally, they knew this is going to be bad. We're going to have to prop our eyes open. They sat there all night, and she said she did not think they were ever going to leave. She said about 3 o'clock, they left. And she said, James said, Rachel, you go ahead and do what you have to do, you know, take your time. He was trying to be supportive of her. And she sat down on the bed in the bedroom where her gown was, and they had slipped in there and taken the slats out from under the bed. Very seldom do you see slats anymore, but in the mountains, in the parsonage, back that far in the mountains, you would see beds that had slats under it. So when she sat down on the bed, the mattress and the springs fell through and she hit the floor. And he came running in there to help get her up. And she got up and she got her gown on and they went to bed. And no sooner did they get to bed by the time, because she cut her leg a little bit. And of course, he was trying to help her bandage her leg up and everything. They just got in bed and here they come with a racket. A racket again, and the wives were with them. They brought in all this food. They had to get up, get dressed quick. He went to the door and he said, just give her time now. Give her time to get up and let us get dressed and then y'all could come in. Well, they beat on the door the whole time they were dressing. And they got up and they went in. They let them in. They came into the kitchen and the dining room. They put all the food out and everybody ate breakfast. All the ladies cleaned up everything, helped her clean the kitchen up. By that time, it was ready for them to get ready to go to church for Sunday school and then morning worship service. So they had to do that. That afternoon, they were expected to have dinner with one of the parishioners, and they were supposed to spend the afternoon with them. They back to church that night, had the evening service, and when they went home that night, they laid in bed 2 hours just waiting for the shivery to start up again, which it didn't. And she said that was one of the most mind-boggling things that she had ever seen in her life. But after they had been there a while, another couple got married. So Rachel and James got in on the new couple's shivery. Now, that couple was from the area, so they knew what to expect. Sometimes they'll even capture the groom, take him away, and set him out somewhere, and he's got to find his way home. I don't think that's very nice because he might have to walk 3 or 4 miles, bride would be worried, the whole nine yards. But the shivery is very much alive and in the Appalachian Mountains, and Gary's very familiar with it, too. It's a whole lot of fun, but in a lot of ways, it's not really fair to the married couple. But then the married couple can jump in and do it to the next person. I want to touch a little bit about the Cherokee wedding. When you have a Cherokee wedding, immediately after you are joined and you leave the circle, you're to go right to your dwelling. Now, if you're at a gathering or a powwow or something and this takes place, you're not at your dwelling. You have your tent. Well, it's not uncommon for the warriors to move the tent because usually the groom has got the tent set up away from everybody else that's camping for their wedding night. And so they have to find it. When they come out, they go to where he put it and it's not there. The warriors have moved it. So they might spend 20 or 30 minutes looking for their tent. And some of the warriors take a little bit of pity on them. and they'll leave markers and clues. And it's always funny to see that. It's kind of bad because if you have, say, a Yongeo, which is a white man, European man, who marries an Indian woman, and he knows this is going to take place, but he doesn't know that they're going to move his wedding tent. He didn't take it too well, but you better learn to take it, because it's usually meant as a lot of fun and just some aggravation. Another custom that the Cherokee have is we let them date. They take walks, and you always have a chaperone. Now, I was always a chaperone. They always picked me because, you see, boo could be bought off. All the guys knew it. So they would want me to chaperone. And, you know, anybody that's in love, you know, they want to kiss and they want to make out a little bit away from everybody. And so you're supposed to walk behind them and kind of keep an eye on them. And so usually the warrior will come up and he'll say, can you turn your back just for a little bit, or can we step behind the tree? And I usually say, what's in it for me? And they'll say, well, we've got this or this. And they'll say, and they know I like jewelry. And they'll say, okay, turquoise jewelry. I like silver turquoise jewelry. So they'll say, how about this? And I'll look at it and I'll say, pretty good. That'll only buy you about 5 minutes. So they come out with more. And so we have a very long walk with two or three stops, and they get to court a little bit and have a little smooching doing. It's funny how customs run. Now, I think Gary has a custom that his son had to do. Am I not right, Gary? When he married his ex-wife, didn't they have to? They kidnapped her and he had to find her. Am I not right?
Yeah, that's actually a European custom, but they'll kidnap the bride and haul her off to a bar somewhere, or to a guest house or a bar somewhere, and they'll sit in there and drink, and the husband or the groom has to search all through the town or the village to try to find where they are, and once he finds them, he has to buy drinks for everyone. So it's kind of a, but also that's probably yet another example of something that evolved from the whole shivery thing.
Mm-hmm. And the shivery is really, a lot of people think it's crazy, but it's really not. It's just, I think years ago, it was just part of a way to break the monotony. The people in the Appalachian Mountains had such a hard time. They eked out a living any way they could, and any form of entertainment they had, they tried to make light of it. And I kind of like the shivery myself. I think it's a lot of fun, along with barn dances and barn raisings and things. But I would like to hear how other cultures do things, like your ex-daughter-in-law's family and mine, the Cherokee, Appalachian, the shivery. Now, the Plains Indians, they had to pay a dowry, and you had to pay that dowry, and it had to meet whatever that daddy wanted. It's something to do. Now, I think a dowry's played out, but, you know, dowries now are still very prevalent in your countries like India, Pakistan, all the Middle Eastern countries still require dowries, and you have to do it, but I think it's fun myself.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. But the thing that strikes me about it, and maybe some other folks too, is about the Appalachians and about the Cherokee, is that these are the places that vestiges of very ancient traditions still exist. Generally speaking, these traditions have disappeared in certain places in Europe, in the Appalachians, we see, but if I was listening as you were describing some of the treatment, it wasn't always a celebratory treatment. It was also punitive.
Mm-hmm.
When someone was thrown into the water, you were talking about sinking, basically sinking or swimming.
Yeah.
The origins of that goes all the way back to the very first set of criminal codes that were ever written that we know of, and that was by King Hammurabi. And Hammurabi's code, they talk about the determination of guilt or innocence in some cases by throwing someone in the river. And if they managed to get out of the river, they were innocent. If they didn't get out of the river, they were guilty. So I can see where that is probably the root of some of these shivery behaviors. And I noticed when the information you sent me, I was just glancing through it, and some of the earliest recorded depictions of charivari or shivery, charivari is the French word for it, comes from the early 14th century. So this is an ancient thing. I think it's important to try to remember and preserve these ancient traditions, because as my daughter once pointed out to some people, that she said, once my dad's generation is gone, there'll be no one left that remembers the old ways.
That's true. Graham put in here and he said, sound like you're selling the daughter, so I guess she's property. Now, they didn't look at it that way. The Indians, I can tell you right quick, didn't own no women. You might have saw that in Pakistan and India and somewhere over there. But they ain't an Indian man ever walked on the Indian woman. We're too independent and too down home and know how to take care of herself to do that, no.
I think one of the things may have maybe a little bit lost in the translation is like when the suitor has intentions of asking for the hand of the daughter in marriage, there is an exchange of things at that point, right, Gigi Spoon?
Yeah.
You want to touch on that just a little bit? Because that is somewhat of a distinction between selling and being bought off, so
to speak. You're given a lot of gifts because you treasure, in the Cherokee culture, you're given gifts to the parents because you admire that daughter and you're not buying her, as you are showing that you can support her. Let me add this, in the Cherokee culture, the women own everything and the women can stop the war simply because the men warred. And if everything belonged to the wife, she was always sure she had a home. She was always sure she had a place to live, to raise the children. And she stopped the war because she bears the warriors who go to war. So it was done in great respect in the Cherokee culture. Also in the Western Indians, you don't see ownership or any mistreatment of women. Them Indian women will take a hatchet to your head. You ask Gary.
They'll scalp your butt.
You ask Gary, there's not an Indian woman anywhere who can't war herself. And that is why it's always been so remarkable to me to hear the stories of my ancestors. And it was passed down through my grandmother. She told about some of the villages being attacked and the warriors were scouting around and taking care of the perimeter. And war started and they did not hold anything back. They picked up an axe and went to war with them. And it's just that an Indian woman can take care of herself. Frumpy said, not selling Grimnir, paying someone to take them off their backs. No, that might be.
He's referring to Pakistan.
Yeah, I'm thinking about over there where it's hard to feed them and everything, but not with the American Indian. That's not the case. If you want to see a very protective and a very loving person, you get involved with some Indian people. You will see how much they cherish their children. And it's like I told everybody, if your grandma had five sisters, you got five grandmas. I mean, that's just the way it is. They love each other tremendously. You can go up on the res and still see it. It's a very close, tight-knit family and a very tight-knit system. Very, very, very done very carefully. They welcome everybody. They sure do watch people. So, yeah, it's a lot of rigmarole to do a lot of this stuff, but it still, I like the customs. I don't know that I'd want to be kept up all night and all day with a shivery, maybe part of the night, but I don't think I want to stay up all night and all day. That'd be a little bit too much for me. I don't think I could be cordial. Do you, Gary?
Well, I don't know. Maybe. But Hal pointed out in the chat room that it was basically the source of putting cans on the car and rice in the clothes and the luggage and riding on the getaway car. That's right. That's the source of it all. And here's, I don't know, maybe one of the takeaways here that I was kind of alluding to earlier. These are the things that holds a culture together. These are the things that hold a society together. If you look at the history of the world, one of the contributing factors to the decline and the eradication of many cultures and society was the concept of multiculturalism. So what happens when you're multiculturalized is you begin erasing some of the existent traditions that held the society together. It is these traditions that hold things together. So if you think about it, you look at some of the, I like to call, cultural Marxism that goes on, and you look at the statue incidents and all the flag incidents and all these are little indicators that someone is trying to erase your traditions, your history, your historical traditions. And it's only now in some of these more remote places, perhaps more ethnically homogenous areas, that these traditions will hold on. And that's what keeps the group, the society, the culture viable. Once you lose that, now you have essentially lost your identity. And as we talked about, I think, last week, recognition is one of the biggest motivators of humans, and also the biggest motivator that's seen in history is recognition, being recognized for who you are, mm-hmm. being recognized for your value, being having your principles and your values appreciated or recognized and maintained. So it's all part of what makes us who we are. When we start to take that apart, to deconstruct that, we now create a condition of chaos, social chaos. And it's only those who want to control you are the ones who are going to create this chaos. I mean, I think we can see that very clearly throughout history. And so if you look around yourself today and things that we were just talking about how YouTube will come up with inventive ways of censoring you. Twitter will come up with inventive ways of censoring you. Facebook, these are all ways to control. These are ways to keep you split up into small groups. And as a small group, you have a hard time maintaining any sort of identity. Isn't that right, Judy's Boo?
That's right. The closest thing I ever came to a shivery on my part of doing is I had a girlfriend that got married, and they had given her a series of bridal showers, and she had gotten several clocks. Some of them were electric, and some of them were wind up. And we knew when she was coming home. We slipped into their apartment, got her mother to open up the apartment, and a bunch of us went in, and we had those clocks set in every room, head on different hours, and all during the first night they were home, there was a clock going off about every 30 to 45 minutes. With the alarm. And she said that like to drive her crazy. But that bled over from some of the shivery that I had heard of and had seen a little bit of, and the whole nine yards on that. And so you have to. Just have to.
Yeah. And there again, it's the traditions that provides the fabric of our society.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it really, it just can't be overstated. And when you look around it, and all the attempts to remove these traditions and or to insert something else in place of those traditions, it's a problem. And it goes along with all the other problems that Hal talked about on his show. The problems with the food and the water and the glyphosate and vaccines and all this stuff. It is a broad, I guess, a broad spectrum attack on humanity from every direction. From your physical to your environmental to your cultural, everything. Everything's being deconstructed and systematically, worldwide. And you have to ask yourself why that is. You have to examine what's going on in the macro. Because, you know, they try to keep you tied up in the micro, but you have to look at things in the macro and see what's going on here. One of the sad things as we start to head toward the end here, anything else you'd like to talk about on the shivery thing, Jesus?
Well, I heard one guy say that when they come back from their honeymoon, that they went into their house, and when they went into their dwelling, we had set off clocks. somebody had filled the bathtub with lime green jello and had plugged it and put some ice in it. And they had a mess when they came home to get out. Now, I don't think that's funny. I kind of think that's too bad. So I didn't like that too much. But that is one thing that they do. It's all mischief making.
Well, you know, some people are going to be a little too inventive, I guess. But still, it has its roots in a very strong cultural history, societal history. So those are important things. And those are the important things that you should strive to pass along as best as you can. One of the things that has really affected people today, especially the techno generations, you know, I hate to point fingers, but it's affected all of us to certain degrees, but the techno generation apparently most prominently, is the lack of our ability to think, or lack of our ability to discern. And that really is part of the overall agenda, in my opinion. There was an article that addresses this very thing. A lot of people have heard of William Dershowitz. He said that, "I find for myself that my first thought is never my best thought. My first thought is always someone else's. It's always what I've already heard about the subject, always the conventional wisdom." He goes on to say what does work. "It's only by concentrating, sticking to the question, being patient, letting all the parts of my mind come into play that I arrive at an original idea. By giving my brain a chance to make associations, draw connections, take me by surprise, and often even that idea doesn't turn out to be very good, I need time to think about it, to make mistakes and recognize them, to make false starts and correct them, to outlast my impulses, to defeat my desire to declare the job done and move on to the next thing." See, that's where, if you look around, this is another one of the things that's being used to deconstruct us, is this 15-second attention span, the soundbite society. This is the parroting. Parroting goes on. It's nuts. It's crazy. You bring up a topic, and immediately you'll get responses that sound just like what's on the mainstream media. You know, they're what they've been fed. They're parroting responses, no thought involved. Nowadays, people think that thinking more than a few minutes is a waste of time. But that's totally nuts. It might take a half hour to come up with a conclusion that someone else comes up in 5 minutes. By thinking about it, one might have a better idea of the different nuances of a situation. It includes variables. Not every situation is the same. There are variables involved in every situation. So you have to look at all these things in this way. It's taking time. And thinking time is non-linear, okay? The time you spend thinking or looking over a problem in a three-dimensional way and exploring all the various perspectives and mental models, that pays you back in dividends. Unfortunately, many are short-sighted, and that usage of time doing that appears to be negative, and it looks like nothing's being accomplished. Just the opposite is true. You're thinking through. To me, this article really touches on something that's important, and this was just some thoughts that were given in this article. It is a 3-minute read for those of you who'd like to remind yourselves that it's not good to become as fast as the CPU on your computer. Your thinking process makes you unique in the world. Your ability to think, your ability to reason, your ability to adopt a particular attitude based on your thoughts, that makes you very unique. And to those who would like to remove that capacity from humans, I don't think it's going to work. I think just like we see the pushback against things like YouTube, against Facebook, against Twitter, we see these pushbacks. It's also going to happen against these people who think that they're going to erase the identity of humanity and place them under control. It's not going to work. And you should be smart enough to see this. And I think people should take great encouragement from that fact. But you also need to contribute positively. Be the thinker, not the reactor. Be the feeder, not the receiver. And that really takes us right up to the top of the hour, Gigi's Boo. You want to finish up with anything?
No, just remember to take the road less traveled, and I love you all big to my heart.
Yes, this is correct. The road less traveled. That's where we is. That's where we've been. We thank you for listening and spending the time with us tonight and all the nights that you do. Remember, keep Real Liberty Media in your thoughts. Throw a little buck here and there as you can. And we look forward to seeing you then next week on the road less traveled. Bye-bye.